Latimer, we're not taking tea in this rowboat, are we?
Good heavens, no, ma'am. The tea lair will be here shortly.
Oh, is it a seaplane? They're wonderful.
No, ma'am.
Oh, look at the bubbles. Is it a submarine?
Much more impressive than that, ma'am.
The lost city of Atlantis?
Not the city, ma'am.
There's something rising out of the sea. Is that some sort of hidden underwater base? Surely it can't be.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman.
There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't spent the last few weeks trying to work out the logistics for a Kickstarter project. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and, of course, a nice cup of tea. I think Latimer has surpassed himself this time and found the most astounding tea lair for us. Even though it looks so strange and futuristic from the outside as it rose up from beneath the ocean, this room inside is decorated more like the interior of a castle, what with the gigantic wooden table, tapestries, candles, and wonderful fireplace. I must admit, when we came down here in that very modern lift, this is the last thing I expected to find. And there's The Birth of Venus by Botticelli over there on the wall. But it can't be the original, surely. Do take a seat at the table. It's big enough for all of us to fit round, I'm sure. You know, I can't shake the feeling that I might have been here before, or seen a picture of it, perhaps. I'm rather intrigued by this strange set of buttons up here at the head of the table. None of them seem to be labelled.
I'm sorry to disturb.
Ah, Latimer, just the fellow. I'm sure this tea there is familiar. Have we been here before?
No, ma'am. It belongs to a business associate of mine.
His taste is rather ostentatious. What do these buttons do?
They have many applications, ma'am. For example, this one slides back the paintings to reveal an aquarium. This one reveals a world map.
Oh, and this one?
Oh, I almost forgot. Your guest has arrived, a Mr. John Horner Jacobs.
Oh, splendid. Let's see his calling card. John Horner Jacobs, novelist, jongleur, lover of animals, man about town. And there's a picture of a dog on it. He's adorable.
I think you'll find that's actually Mr. Jacobs on the last day of Luncon.
No, Latimer, it's clearly a spaniel. Don't be so silly. Show him in.
Very good, ma'am.
For those of you who don't know, John Horner Jacobs is a novelist, and his first novel, Southern Gods, was shortlisted for the Bram Stoker Award. He's written a young adult series called the Incarcerado Trilogy, and most recently the first of his new fantasy series, called The Incorruptibles, has been published by Galanz.
Mr. John Horner Jacobs.
Hello, John. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very well, thanks. Have you got over all of your international travelling?
I think so. My liver is still a little bit swollen.
Oh, dear. Well, I know a good cure for that. Would you like a nice cup of tea?
Yeah, sure. I'd love some.
And how do you take your tea?
In a cup, please.
Do you take milk and sugar?
Probably.
We'll try it with just milk to start off with.
Okay.
So, would you like some bohemian honey cake to go with that?
Yes, you had me at honey.
It's not one that I've tried before, but it looks fabulous with all of these layers, and there's cinnamon in it as well, apparently, and I'll just cut you a slice. Don't worry about the chickens in their little pen over there in the corner. They're quite harmless. Now, in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring with you today?
It's sort of something that's been hanging from my rear view mirror for the past decade. I don't know if you guys have this over in the UK, but there's this stuff called shrinky dinks. Do you know what a shrinky dink is?
I have no idea, and now I must know.
Well, a shrinky dink is a they sell it at toy stores that it's like this sort of layer of plastic that children will draw on. And then they put it in the oven for some reason and put it on like 200 degrees and it shrinks down and it makes sort of like shrinks the whatever illustration that was on the, I guess it's plastic. And it makes it into sort of like a hard piece of almost like super hard plastic that's translucent. On this piece, it's a little jagged hunk of shrinky dink, is a red elephant threaded with a elastic golden stretchy band that my oldest daughter made for me.
Oh.
Yes, O is correct. And the reason she made it for me is because, you know, kids always ask things like, Daddy, what's your favorite animal? What animal, if you could be any animal, what animal would you be? And I invariably always said, an elephant. And I would be a big red elephant. And so this is on the shrinky dink is a red elephant when it hangs from that's sort of my totem animal. And it hangs from a rear view mirror. And it has for a decade because I've had the same car for a decade.
Oh, that's very, very sweet. I wanted to ask you, on the theme of animals, is that a spaniel on your calling card?
Yes, it is.
Is that a special spaniel, or are you just fond of the breed, or is it your pet dog?
No, I don't have a spaniel. I have a mutt, but I like the picture of him, and he was a noble-looking dog, and I started, you know, dreaming of what his name would be, and I came up with Barkley von Wolfenstein, Hound of Hounds, Prima Canis.
Yes, that does suit him very well.
Yeah. This seemed like he's a very regal dog, and so I just decided to put him on my calling card.
Ah, I see. Now, the last time I had a conversation with you was at a party in Luncon, and I have a memory of you saying that you play in a band or that you used to play in a band. Did I imagine that, or is that actually true?
That is true.
Oh, good.
I spent most of my 20s and a good portion of my early, I shouldn't probably say this, but my early 30s playing in bands sort of regionally in the South, mostly in sort of blues-based bands. We opened for some fairly large bands, and we played at, you know, blues fests, and this band sort of grew into a, you know, a 10-piece blues, funk, horn ensemble, and it became too much to, I mean, we had to have a certain amount of money to even play, and those gigs are few and far between, unless you want to play weddings, and playing weddings, and that schism sort of broke the band apart, because I was not interested in playing weddings. If I never had to play Brick House again, I would be happy, but, you know, because that's the wedding standard, and then my writing career sort of got started, and I didn't have the time for playing in music, and I've lost a lot of my chops and sold a bunch of my equipment.
What did you used to play?
I would play guitar. I was sort of the sort of secondary singer, so I would sing backup, and then no one else wrote songs, so the only original songs would be mine, and I would sing those, so that was always interesting.
Hmm. Do you miss it?
I miss performing, and I miss, like, the excitement of the live shows. You know, I do a lot of artistic, creative things, like, you know, I design and do visual arts, and I write on a professional level. Both the visual arts and writing is a absent audience. Mm. You know, you're writing, you have an audience, but they're absent from the moment of creation. Performing live, the audience is there, and so there is humans are, you know, if you're in a bad mood and you're in a terrible mood, you know, or your husband or your friend is, you can feel it from them, right? Like before they open their mouth, before you know anything, you know, they can radiate their mood and their energy. And when you play music, if you're standing up in front of a whole crowd of people, you know, that their energy really does transfer to you as a performer, and yours transfers to them. And it's a feeling unlike any other. Especially, like, it's horrible when you're playing poorly, but when you're on, you know, things, you know, the band gels, you know, all the players sort of like have a sort of temporary telepathy, It's amazing. It's unlike anything.
I wish I could have seen you play.
Well, seeing me was not as good as actually hearing me.
Well, that too at the same time. I wouldn't have been so awful as to turn up with cotton wool stuffed in my ears and just stand there with my arms folded at the back of the room.
Well, you might halfway through the first set. I don't know.
Now, I want you to imagine that you're in a bar.
Okay. That's easy enough. I'm actually in a bar.
No, you're
no,
not.
I'm not.
You're
sorry.
Here with me.
I mean, I just left one. Sorry.
I'd like you to imagine standing in a bar and the news breaks that the universe is about to end. And the bartender is a very fine bartender and says, "Well, last orders, ladies and gentlemen, which drink would you order?"
My special jam is the Balvenie. So if they have the most expensive one, I would have one of those. Other than that, I'd probably just race out the door and try to get my family.
Oh.
Well, I mean, you know.
Okay, and with or without ice?
Neat.
Okay, I will bear that in mind. Not that I think that the universe is about to end any time soon, I hasten to add.
Well, you know, a lot of little personal universes end all the time.
Yes, that's true. Yes, quite a lot of mine seem to have been doing that this year, but never mind. Yeah. So I'd like you to imagine that an action figure is being made of you.
Right.
And you could choose one special feature like eagle eyes or like a karate chopping action or a swinging fist punch from the waist kind of thing. Which one would you insist upon have your action figure having?
I would love my action figure to come with accessories so that like if you press the button on the back, like say like you're playing with it and you have like Skeletor coming to attack my action figure. And then you press the button on the back, my action figure would reach around to his back pocket and pull out a bunch of money and throw it at him.
Well, so he would stop and pick up the money so you could run away?
Right, you know, because money will fix pretty much every problem.
Yeah, that's sadly, that's actually mostly true, isn't
it? That's right, yeah.
Okay, so when I am going to have a nice cup of tea with a friend, I like to ask on the Twitters if anyone has any questions that they'd like to ask you. Now, there was one question, which is just so silly, I'm actually going to use it to ask a secondary question. And that is, why on earth would anybody want to see how many cigarettes they could fit into their mouth at any one time? Are you aware of this as a phenomenon?
I see pictures occasionally of someone. I mean, are they lit?
I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah, me too. I used to be a heavy smoker, and I quit 11 years ago. So I'm just going to stay away from that one. I don't care. Not even one. I can't even fit one in my mouth.
What made you give up, if it's not too personal a question?
No, it's not. It's, I had smoked long enough, and I was a heavy smoker, so I smoked about a pack a day. I had smoked long enough where it just wasn't, there was nothing gratifying about it anymore. In addition to being short-winded and coughing, it's also smelling like smoke, and, you know, and this is an interesting thing, is, and my dad smoked up until he was like 36. I quit when I was 33 or 32. In his generation, they didn't have to interrupt the sort of fabric or, you know, interrupt the timeline of their life to smoke cigarettes. If they wanted to smoke, he would be in his office and he'd fire up a cigarette and keep working. Or if he was driving us somewhere, he would just smoke a cigarette and crack the window, which was terrible.
Yeah.
But for me, I would, you know, with the laws as they are in America now, you know, if you want to smoke, you have to go outside. You know, you can't smoke in the car with your kids. I mean, that's just ridiculous. That's a form of abuse. Anyway, so I was always interrupting my life to go have a cigarette. If I was at work, it would be like, oh, I'm going to take a smoke break. And I'd go, you know, go walk down the stairs, go outside, smoke the cigarette, then go back up. And it might take, you know, 5 to 6 to 8 minutes for the whole process. And if you do that 20 times a day,
yeah,
you're wasting a lot of time. And once I quit, I went a little crazy because suddenly I had all this free time in my hands. And, I took up wood cuts and liner cuts and did a bunch of art and started riding my bike. And I went a little insane with the activities I was doing. Of course, none of them stuck for very long.
Did you find it very difficult to give up, or were you one of the lucky souls who just could?
No, I found it hard. I've tried many times before I quit using patches and gums and whatnot. And then I realized all those things were crutches. Mm-hmm. And I had a sneaky suspicion that the companies that actually own the, you know, nicotine patch and the, you know, the gums and whatever, I think they were probably owned by the tobacco companies as well. So I just quit cold turkey, and it was hard. It was really hard, but it was the first week really sucked. But it was easier after that, and then I hit another sort of low point. About a month or 2 months in, once you quit smoking, all the reasons you've quit have sort of gone away. Like, you're not really short of breath anymore. You're feeling pretty good. And then, mm-hmm. then you're like, you know, you're watching TV and you see someone come on, they're smoking a cigarette glamorously. And you're like, yeah, man, I remember really. It's sort of like thinking about an old ex-boyfriend or girlfriend that you forgot, you know, you remember all the sort of naughty, wonderful parts about it, but you don't about them, but you don't remember like how, you know, bug fuck crazy they were. And so yeah, so that's a hard part because, you know, you're sort of, your body's feeling better and then you don't remember all the reasons you quit. So, but I managed to keep away from it and I haven't smoked for 11 years.
Ah, well, I'm very pleased because hopefully it means you'll be with us longer as well.
Oh yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I'm approaching the, I think next year or the year after will be the amount of time I smoked. So like before I quit. So once I hit that point, I think my risk of heart disease and all that stuff is just the same as a normal person.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. We were watching Ghostbusters the other day, and I was really amazed by how much smoking there is in it, and I hadn't even thought about it before.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoking in that one. I watched it with my kids, and there's a lot more. There's like a ghostly fellatio incident, and
which I never remembered.
I know. I was like, they're like, what's that? What's the lady ghost doing? I'm like, oh, she's just helping him get his pants comfortable. You know, forgot to take off his pants before going to bed. And I'm like, yeah. They did not buy that, but
yeah. Oh. So, moving hastily on from ghostly fellatio. You have a book, and there is no connection, I hasten to add, between ghostly fellatio and your book. The most recent one, The Incorruptibles.
Yes.
I am right in thinking that there is no connection.
With ghostly fellatio?
Yeah.
Yes, there is no connection, though it would probably sell better if there were. But
So tell me more about this book, because it looks beautiful.
It is a gorgeous cover. I'm very lucky the folks at Glance, I hired a man named Edward Bettinson to do the illustration on the cover. And it's, I love it. It's, you know, I have a complicated, I'm a designer. I make a living as an art director. So I have a very complicated relationship with my covers. But this one is beautiful. I mean, I love it. And I like the inside of it as well. You know, the word's pretty cool too. It's a fantasy western, which is set in a world which runs on what I sort of glibly call infernal combustion, where the world is, you know, they're a sort of breed of men, not breed, but a class of men called engineers that summon and bind demons into machines, really, and use them for power. It's set in the sort of point in an empire's westward expansion where they are pushing into unknown territories, encountering fierce and wonderful and strange new creatures. And, you know, it has a sort of Western feel, though it is a fantasy. And I think probably the best blurb or description of it came from Chuck Wendig, who said it's like Stephen King's The Gunslinger meets the Lord of the Rings.
Oh, marvelous.
Yeah.
He has a way with words, Chuck.
He does. He is quite the word slinger.
So this is your debut fantasy, but you've had Southern Gods published, and you also are in the middle of a YA series as well, I understand.
Yes, I have. I'm finished with the writing and everything of the YA. It's just waiting for the last book to come out in the series, which is, you know, I don't. Have you finished your series, or have you wrapped it?
The Split Worlds?
Yes.
No, I have two more books to write. And I'm really looking forward to them being written because it's just like this little bit of grit in my brain all the time.
Yeah, I totally understand. Well, there's such a relief and pleasure when you come to the end of a series. One, especially one that I'm really emotionally attached to, like the YA, because it's very personal. Like the character is the closest I've ever written to me, like to my internal voice, in which it makes sense because it's a 14-year-old boy, but or a 15-year-old boy during the course of the book. I have that series as well, and. I had two books come out this year. The first was The Shibboleth, which was the second book in the young adult series, and then The Incorruptibles.
So, busy year.
Yes, it's been a busy year.
The thing that I'd like to ask you now, I like to ask all of my friends that I take to you is, if you could pick a theme tune that expressed your life, what would it be?
There's a theme that already sort of goes with my name, which is not my favorite thing in the world. My name is John Horner Jacobs, that's my full name, but until I became an author, I went simply by John Jacobs. And I don't know if this is prevalent in the UK, but in the States, there is a song that children like to sing called John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. I've heard it probably over 100,000 times.
Oh, my goodness. It doesn't have to be a theme that has tortured you throughout your life. It can be something nice, if you wish.
Well, even if you take even the best song and you keep repeating it, it becomes hellish. This one is so gleefully sung, and it's a song that works as an infinite loop. So the last line leads into the, you know, like 99 bottles of beer on the wall, so which is a round, but this one is also an infinite looping song. So, yeah, that's the reason why I go by my middle name, just to preclude the singing of that song.
Well, the reason I like to ask people this is so that I can ask my really rather fabulous chickens to sing the song for you. But I'm not sure if you would actually want to hear it sung by chickens.
You know what? I really would like to hear. I mean, if chickens can sing that song, that's amazing. I want to hear it.
Right, little chickens. Could you sing John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt for us, please? And there they go. There you go. The chickens know it. They have an extensive repertoire.
That was amazing, equally amazing and horrifying.
I'm sorry if it's added to your trauma. I'd like to think that perhaps it might have cancelled it out slightly, kind of some soothing balm on that wound, perhaps, but maybe not.
Yeah, no.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Still smarts.
Oh, well, have another slice of cake, because I find that always helps. We can wrap it up for you, because I think, oh, yes, I'm afraid the teapot is empty.
Oh.
I'm afraid this is our time to say goodbye, but it's been such a pleasure to have you visit today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'll just wrap up your cake for you, and Latimer, would you be so kind as to show John the way out?
Very good, Mum.
Do take care, John, and I hope I'll see you sometime next year, either in the States or in the UK, if fortune favours us.
Okay, that would be wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Take care now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This way, sir.
Latimer, don't you think you should go with him? How will he know where to go to once he's out of the lift?
I'm sure he won't have any trouble, ma'am. Just press the red button.
Oh, shit!
That didn't sound right at all. Which one of these opens the lift? Oh, no, the pictures are moving. I don't want to see the aquarium.
Ah, there he is.
I don't want this music either. Oh, no, he's in the aquarium.
I believe that's the shark tank, Mum.
Shark tank? What kind of business was this associate of yours in?
Shipping, Mum, with a side interest in submarines and nuclear weapons.
There isn't a shark in the shark tank, is there, Latimer?
Only one, Mum.
Swim away, John! Why isn't he trying to get out of the tank? Why is he taking his clothes off? Oh, my.
Perhaps you should avert your eyes, Mum. Oh, no. Oh, this is terrible.
Is it eating him?
No, Mum. It's what's beneath his clothes. I can't unsee it.
Is that a zebra stripe wetsuit?
Yes. How could he have known? Impossible. He must wear it under his clothes at all times.
The shark won't be able to see him. Look, it swam straight past him. How clever. That suit has saved his life.
But at what cost, Mum?
Go and fish him out at once, Latimer.
Very good, Mum.
Well, as Latimer helps John out of the shark tank, I'd like to say a special thank you to Marguerite Kenner, Alistair Stewart, and the small army of red cloaks who helped us to host a little tea party with Toby Whithouse at FantasyCon in York. We couldn't have done it without you. I'd also like to mention our very own Patreon page, where you can become a member of the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Should you wish to join the Order and discover how Latimer became my butler, go to www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy. Speaking of the Order, I'd like to raise my teacup to Eitan Zweig and Christine Doyle. Ah, Latimer! Is he all right?
Mr. Jacobs is quite himself, Mum.
Oh, splendid. Find a new tea layer, would you, Latimer? Preferably something with fewer buttons.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.